Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is Hagman. This is the Hagman Report for today. It is Monday, October 12th, 2020. The Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. You're right. You're right. I'm right. The truth can't be silenced. We won't be silenced. And I want to thank you for joining me today, and me and John Moore together. John Moore every Monday. I have a little bit of news for you. Sam Andrews, who is John's Monday guest, is going to be joining me for the first hour tomorrow. I'm excited about that. I tell you what, buckle up, put your seat backs and tray tables in their full upright and locked position, because he's going to be bringing it. All right, HagmanReport.com, folks. We're having some issues, so here's what you need to do. Listen carefully, please. Go to HagmanReport.com. On the top, you're going to see a banner. That's where you click that banner. There it is right there. If you're watching this live, there it is. All right. So you click that banner for all of the audio and video shows. It's just that simple. No more multiple websites. HagmanReport.com. Click the banner on top. And look, you see our shows right there. And hopefully that's where you're watching this episode, because the links to John Moore's website, thelibertyman.com, are going to be right there in the program description box. Not on YouTube, not on Spreaker, not anywhere else, but just only at Hagman Report Live. So when we get kicked off of YouTube, and we will, and elsewhere, you can, it's already there in your phone, in your iPad, in your computer, in your head. You know, just write it down, HagmanReport.com. Click on the banner, which you can't miss. All right. Happy Columbus Day to everyone. Did you see in Portland more statue destruction last night? Of course. Apparently the fascists don't like history and statues. And people say, well, they're only statues. No, it's not about the statues. It's about our history. Because all communists and fascists want to do is delete history. And as I speak right now, Amy Coney Barrett, the confirmation hearings are going on, went on today at, in the Senate. And Ted Cruz had a fantastic opening statement. We can play that later, okay? But there's more important. That's important. Remember, you know, sometimes I think that people put too much stock in Supreme Court justices, because, you know, they're like boxes of chocolates. Sometimes you never know what you're going to get. Remember, they don't make the law, okay? A lot of people think they do. Matter of fact, lawmakers don't even make the laws. The lobbyists make the laws. Anyway, that's another story. With me, of course, every Monday is the fantastic, the man, the myth, the legend, right? John Moore from thelibertyman.com. And he's a hell of a guy. I'm going to tell you, he's a man's man. He can kick your butt any day of the week. I know. Man, I'm telling you, he can. I'm kidding, of course. John, how you doing, man? How was your weekend?
Outstanding, Doug. I had a wonderful, relaxing weekend. A 300-mile drive in my Triumph TR6, which included 14 of the most beautiful miles in the country, which is the River Road on the Mississippi River, right next to the Mississippi River, between Alton, Illinois, and Pere Marquette State Park.
I accidentally found myself on that road when I was driving in, when I went to Missouri and then coming, accidentally found myself in Arkansas. And that's a true story. I took a wrong turn somewhere and it says, welcome to Arkansas.
This is why I took his keys.
Yeah, I'm not allowed. But see, John, here's the thing, okay? If you make enough mistakes in front of your family, you just hand over the keys because you're too, you know. And you can sit in the back and drink coffee, read the paper, whatever you want to do, read a book, or listen to, you know. That's why.
I'm sure you drove four hours out of the way for that reason.
My neighborhood, go ahead, as opposed to most urban suburban areas, when a man gets too old to be trusted with certain things, that before they take his keys to his vehicle, they take away his chainsaw. That's what happens in my neighborhood when a man is becoming too incompetent or too feeble to be trusted with something that can cause great bodily harm. Yeah. They take away his chainsaw.
Yeah, I suppose, you know what, taking away the chainsaw might be the best first move. Although, I'm more into the AK-40. If you can't take it out with an AK-47 or some dead cord, see, that's what they're going to take away from me, is the dead cord and AK-47 first. So, when you have a hammer, everything's a nail, right? Anyway, yeah. All right. But yes, taking away the chainsaw. And you still got your chainsaw, though.
Absolutely. I have two chainsaws. Absolutely. Yep.
You know, I want to ready to go. I just got to say this. I want to thank everyone again. Thank you for tuning in to this show. Sometimes in all the darkness, and I'm serious now, the headlines are dark. Sometimes you just have to smile a little bit. You really do. And thank God and smell the roses and appreciate people. Appreciate one another. Appreciate people like John Moore. I do. I appreciate John Moore more than he knows and more than you know. I appreciate each and every one of you. I'm not going to get on a soapbox here, but I just want to tell you from the heart, sometimes you just have to stop and say thank you. And that's what I mean. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. All right, John, let's get into it. Before airtime, you had mentioned, you know, Dan Bongino was talking about the plans coming up, brother.
The plans. Openly admitted, well documented in their own words from top level Democrats. And, a lot of the show Friday focused on a female New York Times reporter reaching out to Bongino, wanting his comments on the stated plan of the Democrats to have violence in the streets if President Trump is reelected. Bongino made a good point. Why are they focusing on him instead of the people who are making these statements publicly? Dan is just the messenger. He's not the message. So it's kind of backwards, because names are named, documents are revealed that the Democrats do in fact plan to institute what they call street fights. And they specifically say, we don't mean court actions. Of course, there'll be court actions.
True.
But they do mean violence in the streets. Now, I regard what's going on right now as a basically rest and relaxation, rest and re-equipment of the Antifa Black Lives Matter terrorists. They are communist insurgents preparing for the day after the election. They may strike sooner. What happened in Portland is a good example of that. To honor Christopher Columbus Day, they tore down a statue of Teddy Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln. That was the way they celebrated Columbus Day.
That's right.
They didn't have a statue of Columbus to tear down, so they tore down other statues. One of the goals of the communists is to separate us from our history. And they've had great success. I like to mention the Civil War as probably one of the greatest, most outstanding successes that they've had, because the outcome of the Civil War is still affecting us on a daily basis, Doug. I'm looking up some notes here that I made a number of days ago, because I want to make sure I get this right. But what people are taught in school, whether it's elementary school, high school, or college, about the American Civil War is all wrong. It's all wrong. We like to use analogies, right, Doug, to make a point. That's what Americans like to do.
Analogies and word pictures. That's right.
Exactly. Well, I'll make a rather ridiculous analogy. Let's say the Germans really don't like the French consuming snails, what they call escargot. And they're so concerned about it that they're willing to go to war with another country that's they raise and consume snails as a delicacy. So it would be a good thing for Germany to outlaw the consumption of snails before they go to war with another country over that matter. Wouldn't it be a pretty smart thing to do?
Sure. Yeah, right.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, let's take that analogy and move forward to the Civil War. Two countries. First of all, it wasn't a civil war. The Civil War takes place in the confines of one country. One country invades another. By definition, it's not a civil war. It's war, not civil war. But leaving that aside for a moment. Here's what most Americans believe, that Abraham Lincoln and the Americans in what was left of the United States, 25 states, they were so outraged over the matter of slavery that they invaded another country to stop slavery in the other country. Would it be a fair statement, Doug, to say that that's pretty much what most Americans believe?
Yes, I would say. Okay. Sure. Okay.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Now, if that was true, wouldn't it be smart for the United States of America to ban slavery in their own country first before they go to war in another country to stop slavery in another country? Would that be a smart thing to do first?
Well, I think that's a little bit too much common sense, but yes.
Well, it would be. However, that's not what happened. Now, here's the states. I looked up my notes. West Virginia, Missouri, Kentucky, Maryland, and Delaware. Sounds like five states, five of the 25 states of the United States of America, all during the Civil War, had men and women, boys and girls, bought and sold back and forth just like packs of chewing gum.
Correct.
Because slavery was not, in fact, banned in the United States of America. And, in fact, it gets better. The Emancipation Proclamation did not ban slavery in the United States of America. Read it carefully. It doesn't. I recall I watched the film Lincoln as opposition research, and they got these two black American U.S. soldiers reciting the Emancipation Proclamation as if it was some kind of holy document.
All right.
As if it freed the slaves in the North, which it did not free the slaves in the North.
Thank you.
Now, what it attempted to do was free slaves in a different country, which, of course, it couldn't. So here's when slavery ended. And first of all, the war began in 1861.
Correct.
It ended May the 9th, 1865. Slavery ended in West Virginia, February 1865. February ended in Missouri, January 1865. Slavery ended in Kentucky, December 1865. Ended in Maryland in November 1864, and in Delaware, December 1865.
I'll trust you on those dates, okay? But yeah, that's
well,
sounds about
I looked
right.
them up.
Okay,
they're good dates. But even if slavery ended one day after the war began, I mean, it would make a point. But the point being, all during the Civil War, slavery was legal in the United States of America, and it's very possible. I don't know that it happened, but given the gravity and the extent of the war, it's very possible that the sons of U.S. citizens who owned slaves were drafted to fight men in the South in the Confederate States of America whose families did not own slaves. How bizarre and how crazy is that, Doug?
Yeah, well, war is kind of crazy.
Well, it is. It's organized insanity.
Yeah.
But a lot of what we're experiencing right now, much of what we do right now, is based on the outcome of the Civil War. Even today, more than a century later, much more than about, what is it now, 150 years, thereabouts?
Yeah, how so, though? Years.
How so? Well, most of the U.S. military bases are in the South, the big ones. They're still in the South. That was part of the occupation forces, moving the U.S. Army to have their massive bases in the South, in Texas, North Carolina, Fort Bragg, Kentucky, Fort Campbell, and so forth.
I never gave that a thought. Okay.
Well, it was an occupation force, is what it was.
True, yes, okay.
We're dealing right now with reparations. That's a hot-button issue that's on the table to be discussed right now. Reparations for slavery. So that's a hot button issue that's still one of the outcomes of that despicable practice that we had back then.
But you're not in favor of reparations, are you?
Well, of course not.
Okay. Because, I mean, to me, that's so ridiculous. But okay.
It's wealth transfer based on a fantasy, is what it is.
There you go.
And part of the overall communist strategy to destroy the United States of America, bankrupt us, which is what national health care will become. It's already headed that direction. Entitlements, if left unchecked, will in fact bankrupt the country. And you can look at the numbers. The numbers don't lie. If the entitlement programs are left unchecked, they will in fact bankrupt the country because they grow exponentially. And it's a very sad thing, but that's where we are. It's important, Doug, to understand what your real history is so you don't repeat mistakes of the past. It really is. All history, not just the Civil War, but all history. Knowing the following, for example, the last time we had a war involving United States soldiers that was both constitutional and necessary was the War of 1812. The Civil War was unnecessary. In fact, I'm not sure there was ever a declaration of war. I've looked and haven't been able to find one.
How do you have a declaration of war in a Civil War? Who do you declare war against? I mean,
The Confederate States of America was a separate country. The Confederate States of America had a constitution, they had a president, a congress, a monetary system, a postal service, defined boundaries, everything a country had.
But we had a shared constitution, though.
Yeah, they had their own constitution.
Okay.
They became a separate country.
Okay. All right. Well,
regardless, let's move on from there.
Go ahead.
The Spanish-American War began because the battleship Maine sunk in Havana Harbor. The Hearst newspaper empire, William Randolph Hearst, took great pride in personally starting the war, the Spanish-American War. It turns out, we now know, because divers have gone down and inspected the battleship Maine, which is still at the bottom of Havana Harbor, by the way. It blew itself up. There was no Spanish terrorists, no Spanish commandos that blew up the battleship Maine. It was purely a power grab to expand the United States' influence around the world. World War I. President Wilson was elected on a platform of keeping our boys out of Europe. That was a European war, did not involve any vital U.S. national interests. The passenger liner Lusitania also had cargo holds. Lusitania was known to the German intelligence to be preparing to carry munitions, weapons from the United States to England. And the German embassy was running ads. Do not book passage on the Lusitania. It is a legitimate target of war. Americans book passage on it anyway. So it was traveling across the Atlantic in a convoy to kind of keep it safe until it got off the coast of Ireland when it dropped back away from the convoy, making it vulnerable to the German submarines that was sunk. And that was the start of the American involvement in World War I. We had no business being in that war. World War II. The Japanese made every effort to inform the United States government that they were about to bomb Pearl Harbor. All those attempts were rejected. We now know that because we had the codes, the radio codes, secret codes, we now know that we knew about the date of the invasion, the attack on Pearl Harbor, before it happened.
Yep.
In fact, a friend of mine, she was friends with one of Franklin Roosevelt's granddaughters, and the Roosevelt's granddaughter said the following: "You know, the family's taking a lot of heat now that almost everybody knows that Grandpa knew about Pearl Harbor before it was attacked." It's become quite common knowledge.
Sure.
Now, the Korean War was kind of sort of an exception for the following reason: we engaged in treaties to make us complicit in the defense of Korea. So we had treaty obligations to defend Korea when it was invaded by the North Koreans. So that makes it kind of sort of legal on one hand. On the other, when MacArthur wanted to use nukes, President Truman's advisor said, "Oh, Mr. President, we can't do that because the Chinese communists have nukes also and the war will become nuclear." After the death of that advisor, whose name escapes me, his personal effects were gone through, and it was found that the man advising President Truman about the Chinese was, in fact, a communist agent, and the, of course, the communist Chinese did not have nuclear weapons. One bomb would have stopped that war in a heartbeat. Vietnam, we have the former Secretary of Defense in his book, in his biography, revealing that he knew, now we all know, that the Gulf of Tonkin incident never happened. The Gulf of Tonkin incident, which never happened, where an American warship was allegedly attacked by North Vietnamese warships. That was the basis for the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which gave the authority for President Johnson to get American men involved in direct combat as opposed to training and logistics, which they had been up to that point. And, of course, our two most recent wars, we've got Saddam Hussein, who did not have any nuclear weapons. If you read the joint resolution written authorizing President Bush to go to war with Iraq, you can see what the concern of Congress was. Clearly, the concern was the possession of nuclear weapons on the part of Saddam Hussein, which he didn't have.
Are you talking nuclear or are you talking about chemical and biological?
Well, of course he had chemical and biological. They came from us.
Thank you. That's right. Stamped with made in
the
USA.
He was our ally for years and years.
Yep.
He was our ally. And of course he had chemical and I don't know about biological, but he had chemical weapons provided by the United States. Now, Afghanistan, this is where it really gets fun. A foreign country had about two busloads of Saudi Arabian terrorists, about 100 men. Now, calling Afghanistan a country is kind of a stretch. Once you get 50 miles away from Kabul, those people don't know about Afghanistan, the country Afghanistan, or anything else. They live their lives the way they have since basically the 9th century. But we call it a country, and Kabul is more or less a city. So we went to war with an entire country because of the presence of two busloads of Saudi Arabian terrorists. How crazy is that, Doug?
It's a good point.
That's absolute insanity.
Yeah.
We weren't at war with the government of Afghanistan, the people of Afghanistan. They posed no threat whatsoever to the United States of America. The only threat to the United States of America was these 100 Saudi Arabian terrorists that had sought shelter in Afghanistan. That was the only threat. And we went to war for what? We're almost out of there now. 18, 19 years? Because 100 men in this country posed a threat to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did.
Yep.
Now that's our real history. And I'm a member of the American Legion, the VFW, and other veterans groups. I notice the publications are very careful to dance around the real history of these previous wars and not put forth when it comes to Pearl Harbor, for example, we have a celebration of Pearl Harbor Day every year at December 7th, not putting forth the false narrative. They just say Pearl Harbor was attacked. They don't say it was a sneak attack. They don't say it was a surprise attack because it wasn't a sneak attack or a private attack. In fact, Franklin Roosevelt was the Secretary of the Navy in World War I. He very well knew about naval power. He'd evacuated all the modern ships out of Pearl Harbor, leaving behind the antique ships that didn't matter all that much to make sure that we had a presence in the South in the Pacific to fight a new war with the new ships, the good ships, not the old war out ships from World War I era. He martyred all the aircraft parked in circles with the engines facing towards the inside of the circle. You know, Doug, airplanes in 1941 and in 2020, they can't go backwards. They can only go forwards under their own power. If you want to delay the response and make sure the attack has a better success, you park the airplane so they can't quickly take off, which is what he ordered. Now, I'm not sure if it plays a role or not, but the brand new cutting-edge radar was shut down in Pearl Harbor about an hour before the attack. I've never seen any evidence that that was by design. I do find it rather unusual, to say the least, because there was a lot of tension in Pearl Harbor. The men and the officers, they knew war was coming. There was no doubt in their minds that war was coming.
I'm glad you said that. I don't mean to interrupt you. I just want to add something here. NPR, for example, recently had, and I say recently, within the last couple of years, had a special about this very issue about Pearl Harbor. Oh, no. No, it's a fake story that lives on. No, FDR did not know about the attack of Pearl Harbor. Okay. Well, there's no, I just want to say, and then, but here's the other thing. Here's what I find very interesting. If you go to overseas to like the Sun or overseas newspapers and overseas, news agencies, you'll find that yes, memo shows, U.S. warned of Japanese attack, foreknowledge of Pearl Harbor verified by way of cables and so on. So, you know, I just find it very interesting. We here in the West can't get the information that you're giving, yet others are looking and they're laughing at us. Go ahead, sir.
Well, there are several sources for Franklin Roosevelt finding out. First of all, before Pearl Harbor, the English Navy had captured a working Enigma machine, which was a mechanical device to send messages in code, encrypted. And he figured out how this thing worked. And they were decrypting all the German and Japanese radio traffic using that machine. When they got the message about the time, the date of the attack on Pearl Harbor, Winston Churchill personally gave a note to President Kennedy's father, Joe Kennedy, who was the ambassador to London at the time, to hand carry that note across the Atlantic to and hand it to the President of the United States, Franklin Roosevelt. That's what really happened. It's a shame that this manipulation of history continues to this day. And I try to tell someone who was an adult in World War II, like my parents, that Franklin Roosevelt knew about the war, knew about the attack on Pearl Harbor before it happened. That's a non-starter. Their entire being, their entire soul is based on that being reality if it was a surprise attack.
Yeah.
Because every family in this country, with few exceptions, lost somebody in that war or had somebody who was in the war or both.
Of course.
It was such a pivotal point in American history. Was it over 12 million men and women in uniform at the same time? What a tremendous undertaking. All major industries converted over in weeks from producing cars to producing tanks, from producing trucks to producing aircraft, from producing sewing machines to producing rifles. Singer sewing machine manufactured excellent M1 carbines, by the way. Such a dramatic impact on our country, our culture, and you'll still hear almost on a daily basis references to before World War II and after World War II. That's a routine thing in our culture, isn't it, Doug?
It is. Continue. Yeah, it is.
Well, it's unfortunate. And I'm not sure what NPR's agenda is. Why would they want to conceal? Of course, Roosevelt was a hero of the Democrats, a hero of the socialists and communists. I don't know if he was a communist or not. I know he had communists in his administration, taken over by President Truman. I know that things that he promoted certainly moved the communist agenda forward. Whether he was a communist or not himself, I don't have that information.
Well,
the public record certainly demonstrates that he was a traveling companion of the communists, if not a communist himself.
Yes. His entire, what was it, the CC, the works projects. Those were all
CCC camps.
Thank you. Yes,
Civilian Conservation Corps. That was a training program for soon-to-be soldiers.
Right.
In fact, the National CCC Museum is in St. Louis, Missouri, at Jefferson Barracks, Army Post. It's not much of a museum, but it's there.
Okay. All right. So this is some great history. And I think most everyone out there listening and viewing, know about this. And of course, you know, we take it to 9/11. And, of course, you know, what happened in 9/11. It's hard to believe it's almost 20 years ago. I mean, think about that, folks.
We got soldiers in Afghanistan who weren't born when 9/11 happened.
True. True. I mean, okay. Yes. But then.
Well, we do.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Again, I'm looking back in time. I'm thinking, I remember where I was. I remember that day. And I remember, of course, the days leading up and the weeks leading up to that. And, I don't know how many people out there had a kind of an odd feeling, that summer of 2001, but nonetheless. And of course, John, I think you're laying something out here right now. I think that we are primed for false flags.
We are.
Gresham Whitmer, that whole, thing where you had, how many, I think ultimately 13 were arrested, on a kidnapping plot.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to tell you something. Mm-mm. No. And of course they're right wings, white supremacists, right? No, they weren't. No.
Hardly.
No. So hardly. Anyway, so right now the groundwork that you just laid, boy, are we ever in this area for a false flag or multiple false flags? So continue.
Well, going back to Civil War for a moment. So slavery was an issue. It was not the issue.
Correct.
The issue was money. The plantation system was the money generating cash cow for the United States Treasury. That's what it was. And after decades of the money going north to the U.S. Treasury and almost nothing coming back, the men and women generating this revenue basically said, we've had it. All our money's going north to pay for things that the northern states who control Congress and the Senate want to do. Almost none of it's coming back to us, and we've had it. We want to keep this money down here for us to spend on our people, our projects, our infrastructure, which would be roads, seaports, the things that they were doing back then. That's what the war was about initially. It was about money. Now, halfway through the war, the worst riots in this country, Doug, were the anti-draft riots in the North. These young men did not want to be drafted to fight other Americans. They did not want to. And the most violent, with the highest death tolls, riots this country has ever seen were the anti-draft riots in the northern cities.
Okay, yeah, let's, if you don't mind, educate me on that. Educate me, because that's interesting.
They needed an army to fight the Confederate States of America, and they were drafting young men for this army. And the men were resisting, and the resistance became basically open warfare, the riots in Chicago and New York and Philadelphia against the draft that was taking place. It was, a quarter of a million Americans died in that war, more than any war we've had, much more. And it didn't take long for men to figure out, if I get drafted, there's a high likelihood, if I come back at all, I'll be missing a body part, a part of an arm or part of a leg or both. Amputation was one of the methods of choice to save a man's life back then. So, yes, in fact, my great-grandfather was drafted into the Union Army just a few months before it ended, not far from where I'm sitting, in the county seat of Crawford County, Steelville, Missouri. He was a very bitter man. I got secondhand reports from my grandmother that he was a very bitter man. And I don't know if it came out of that war or not, but he did raise his family, three beautiful daughters, and he had a good life working for the railroad. But his life was a bitter life. And I can't say if it was a consequence of post-traumatic stress. Even though he was in the war only a few months, I don't know what he saw. I don't know what he did.
Right.
But these men did what they needed to do to stay alive. That's what happens in any war.
Okay, well, getting back to your, and this is something that I find very interesting, the draft riots, which you had mentioned, that took place. Actually, it took place at various times, but the biggest, I think, in what you're referencing, in New York City, 1863, July. That really was known as Draft Week, July 13th through 16th, 1863, and took place in Lower Manhattan primarily, and there were some severe riots. You think, you know, Portland looks bad. There was actual shootings and bombings to the extent there could be at that time. So, yes.
Right. Well, I see you were doing your homework there, Doug. Thank you.
Yep. There you go. I know how to use a search engine. <I'm kidding. laughs> but no, you're exactly right. And it was, I didn't realize, and I have to admit, I didn't realize that there were, the riots were that significant. No, I knew that there was.
They make the LA riots, the Watts riots, the Detroit riots pale by comparison.
Yeah.
The death toll was massive compared to any riot the last half century, going back to the mid to late 1960s.
Amazing.
They were, but that's been lost in history. The mass media does not want to talk about that. The public education system does not want to talk about what really happened between 1861 and 1865. They simply don't want to do it because it destroys the narrative. And they want to keep the narrative alive. And they'll do whatever it takes to maintain that.
Mm. All right.
So, well, Doug, what direction do you want to go next?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we're about a little over 3 weeks away. 21 days from the election. And here we are. Today was day one of the Barrett hearings in the Senate. There's a lot of angst over that. There's a lot of turmoil. I want to just share a personal experience with you, John. Biden was in my hometown of Erie, Pennsylvania over the weekend. All right. Now, when he flew into the airport, because of what we do here, there was some surveillance done, okay? And I can tell you that more pro Donald Trump supporters were present than pro Biden supporters. And we are
at a Biden event. Why would the pro Trump people even show up at a Biden event?
Well, I don't want to use the term protesters, okay? But that's what people would normally call, you know, the people who show up. But so they were protesting or attempting to enlighten the Biden supporters about the socialist nature of Biden. But here's what I thought this was very interesting. Again, the numbers in this is a truly Democratic stronghold. Okay. Erie, Pennsylvania's. And I've never seen such animus, potential. The police actually had to get between, the Trump and Biden supporters. And you may say, well, that's nothing new, but we're talking a very calm, you know, Erie, Pennsylvania. That doesn't happen here. Okay. It just doesn't happen. And what that told me, in observing that and observing, and by the way, the number of out of state plates for the Biden supporters that were the most vocal, shall we say, very interesting. And, so anyway, the reason I mention this is because I can see right now that I believe Donald Trump is going to win by a landslide. I really do, given the fact that just what I saw this weekend, and Erie is a test market for a lot of things, and I have a feeling that that was a test market at least from an analytical point of view, or a test event from an analytical point of view. So I do believe that Donald Trump is going to win. I think that they're going to attempt to take the presidency from him. I think that there's been enough research, and that you've talked about this enough. We've talked about this enough, and we are going to be going to war. There will be blood, in the streets. And I had the pleasure of speaking with Sam Andrews over the weekend. Again, folks, John Moore's radio program, go to thelibertyman.com and click on the link there on this webpage, and it'll take you to the current day's program or previous program. So every Monday, Sam Andrews is a guest of John Moore. But what he said, because I asked him this, I said, you know, what's it going to take for Americans, true red-blooded patriotic Americans, to push back? Or why haven't we done so already? And he said, simply put, America's, men's guts aren't all over the street yet. But he said, we're at stage 4 of 5 stages, and never has a country ever gone backwards from where we're at, back down, stood back or stood down from civil conflict. It's always gone to the fifth stage, and that's active insurgents, or that's active civil war. So it's not looking good. So to answer your question, wherever that comes, wherever you want to take this is up to you. But I see some bad things coming here in the next couple of months.
Well, we're on the same page, Doug, and you and I have been talking about that now for several months. It's nothing new. What's new is how close this is. 3 weeks, 21 days.
Yeah.
A week from today, it'll be 14 days, and so forth. We've been saying for months, this time will fly by. Well, it has flown by. It absolutely has flown by. The opposition, I call them socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, they are regrouping, retraining, re-equipping, rearming, preparing for blood in the streets, violent communist revolution, violent communist insurrection. That's in fact what this is. The word, the Russian word Bolshevik, you know what that word means in the Russian language?
Do tell. Bolshevik.
Majority. Majority. That's what the word Bolshevik means. There were never, ever more than 2 or 3% of the Russians that were involved with the Bolshevik party, ever, the Bolshevik revolution.
So
they were highly organized.
Okay, so wait a second. So it really wasn't a Bolshevik revolution.
Well, it was not a majority.
Right.
It was highly trained, very dedicated, well-paid, well-funded group, very small group of men and women who wanted to take over the Tsarist Russia and impose communism there, funded by Western money interests, mm-hmm. that did not want to see the Tsar do what he was planning on doing, was bringing Russia into the modern age with modern infrastructure, modern manufacturing, modern transportation, and so forth. The Western industrialists and bankers looked at that happening as a threat to what they had going. And that's why they wanted to overthrow the Tsar and turn Russia into a communist nation that would not pose a threat to Western industry. That's what really happened, Doug.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. Wow. Well, again, talking with Sam Andrews over the weekend, he directed my attention, and I asked him, I said, give me a comparison from what you've seen, your studies, and John, you too. I mean, from everything that you've studied of the wars, the uprising, the unrest and such, what's this, meaning the United States, the West in general, what's this most like? And he said, South Africa. And I got to thinking about that and doing some research and reading about, South Africa. And I have to agree to a large extent. So anyway, I mean, that's, It looks like that. What are your thoughts on this?
I met a very black, black as midnight mayor from South Africa, and Mayor Linda. He was a mayor of a township with 1 million residents, mostly black. And he was touring the United States. This would have been, I'm looking at maybe 1990, something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact year. And it was basically, please help us. Nelson Mandela is a communist. The African National Congress is a communist organization. We don't want South Africa to become communist. Please help us. Instead, what happened was we're doing everything we could to hurt the regime in South Africa, which, by the way, I was talking to a very dear friend of mine, a very liberal attorney. And I said, South Africa had a fence all around the perimeter to keep black people out, not to keep black people in. And he says, why is that, John? I said, well, that was the best country in the entire continent to be a black man or a black woman, was South Africa. The best country in the entire continent to be a black person was South Africa under apartheid. Oh, John, you can't talk about that. Don't talk about that publicly. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but it's the truth. That is the truth. Well, Mandela and the communists have pretty much destroyed South Africa, destroyed its manufacturing base, destroyed a lot of what made South Africa wonderful with their communist socialist programs. And that will continue unabated, apparently. Now, in Zimbabwe, we have a little bit different thing. The communists took over there. And finally, some leaders in Zimbabwe finally said, we've had enough of this. And they overthrew the communist regime and are welcoming the white farmers back. Zimbabwe was the bread basket of Africa. Incredible agricultural production there until the communists took over, making a food exporting country into a food importing country, and still couldn't get enough because nobody wanted their money.
Right.
Zimbabwe currency became an absolute disaster, an absolute joke worldwide, for a very good reason.
I might have a bill, an actual piece of currency from Zimbabwe. Okay. All right. So, wow.
But what happened in South Africa was the communists taking over and with the plan to destroy the country. They could care less about improving the lives of blacks. The lives of blacks in South Africa was already better than any country on the continent. It was already at that point. Yeah, they had a program of apartheid where blacks were treated differently than whites. That's true. I'm not going to make any apologies for that on one hand. On the other, it was a system that worked. It was a system that gave the most economic opportunity to black people anywhere on the continent. And they were free to leave anytime they chose to. A very important point, because once the communists take over, you're not allowed to leave.
Right.
You become property of the state. So if the South African apartheid government was so evil and so bad and so oppressive, why didn't blacks leave there for better opportunities in the many and I'm not sure how many countries there are in Africa, a couple of dozen, and one of the other wonderful countries in Africa. Why didn't they do that? Well, they didn't, because it was the best opportunity, and they all knew this. That's why they didn't leave. They all knew the best opportunity for them, their families, their children, to have economic opportunity and education and so forth was right there in South Africa under apartheid.
Obviously, not a very popular statement to make, but nonetheless.
Well, it's reality.
It's reality. That's right.
It's reality.
Yeah, that's very true. Okay. Wow. I'm looking at the days leading up to Donald Trump's election, re-election. I believe that's going to happen. I'm looking at the, one thing that's really gotten my attention, perhaps the most egregious thing that I'm seeing is the media's active involvement in the election. You talk about election meddling by the media. My goodness, you know, the pro-Biden media. This would not have happened a dozen years ago. I'm astounded that people are allowing this, that we are allowing this with the media. And I'm not sure if I made myself clear on that or if I really drove home the importance of this, but when you don't have a media that is actually fair and balanced, and forgive the, there's no pun intended, there are no reference to Fox. When you don't have a fair and balanced media, your country is in big trouble, and we don't have that.
Not even close, though.
No. So I'm seeing that. You know, I'm seeing that. And speaking of that, I don't know whether you saw over the weekend, this is getting real. A member of a news station, Channel 9 News, I believe it is. I don't know exactly what kind of a station it is, but in Denver, one of their security guards, a Pinkerton security guard, who is an admitted, leftist, shot and killed a patriot. I don't know how else to describe him, but somebody who identifies with the patriot movement, and shot him in the head. And I don't know how many people have seen the videos out there. It's pretty graphic in terms of the shooting, but the immediate aftermath of the shooting, where it's almost like a celebration by the left. Hey, they should, another one got it. You know, another one of these white supremacist, insert adjective here, which is dead or has been shot. And so you combine all of this, and I'm thinking this is not going to go well. I mean, I say that, you know, I mean, I think that, that's going to be a seminal moment, I believe. It's going to be looked upon as a seminal moment that would happen in Denver. I don't know.
I don't know the details. That's first I've heard of it, Doug. And you want to give us some details on what happened and why?
You know, I don't even know if they've released at this point, even today, they've released the name of the victim or the shooter outside of social networking. And that's important. Hang on a second here. I'll check as we talk. I'll check on this. Let's see here. Because I was following it as it was taking place, and a name was 4chan had, the people at 4chan had uncovered the name of the individual who, the perpetrator, as well as the victim, but no one's verifying it. Hang on a minute here. I don't even see it in the news, but it was a big deal in Denver where, a security for 9 News was shot by, another individual who had a can of bear spray. I'm not sure if there was a fight that preceded it, but that's, let me see if I'm trying to find the names. That's what's taking me so long here. I'm trying to find the names.
Right.
But it kind of gives you an overview. When this starts happening, when this kind of event or these events begin happening, I think it's almost like a snowball rolling down the hill where it just gains, you know, gains size and gains momentum. And that's what I'm seeing taking place right now. So, I can't lay my hands on it right now without.
Well, that's okay, Doug. Well, it'll pop up later, I'm sure. It may be a seminal event. It's hard to say, you know, when something gets started like this. George Floyd was a seminal event, and we all got snookered. I was sitting next to the pastor of my church, maybe 3 or 4 days after George Floyd died. And I said, Pastor, they keep getting it wrong, but looks like this time they got it right, that being the left and their anti-police narrative. Of course, we now know that George Floyd was a drug addict, and he was in the final stages of dying from a drug overdose, that the knee on the neck had no effect on this man whatsoever. In fact, he was already suffering and dying from a drug overdose in the back of that police cruiser and asked to be removed from it. He kept saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. He was sitting upright in the police cruiser saying he couldn't breathe. So at his own request, the police removed him from the cruiser, placed him on the ground, knee on the neck, which was an approved restraint method of the Minneapolis police at the time. And he died. He died of a drug overdose. He did not die of the knee on the neck. So once again, the anti-police narrative got it wrong again, which they've done time after time after time, haven't they, Doug?
They have. All right. Now, hang on one second here. Excuse me. COVID. They have. All right. Oh, my goodness. Sorry about that. News outlet. Okay, this is from Breitbart. Let me go backwards here. News outlet admits Denver protest shooter was their security guard. And I apologize, folks, for my lack of preparation. I just couldn't find it in my notes or in my office about this. I was following this over the weekend. So Denver NBC outlet. And there it is on your screen. Thank you, Eric the Tech. This is on Breitbart. News 9 admitted the shooter who killed a man near a Patriot rally worked for them as a contract security guard. And this was at the end of the rally when people were leaving. And now there's not, let's see here, I don't think this, there might be some, there's some pretty good videos. The one, Eric the Tech, Chester Belloc, on that same page, if you scroll down, there is a Twitter video. This is the one that caught my attention the most. I think this was the one, or this is the one that had the aftermath. It's a minute 47 seconds, so I believe it does have the aftermath. Can we play that? No. John, take a look at this. Again, this is...
Okay, let's do it.
Do you have? Do you see which one I'm talking about? Okay.
Coming around.
I believe this is right before the show.
Straight up, right in front of me.
All right, that didn't have the celebratory words by an attendee, a BLM Antifa attendee, but two people are in custody after this shooting, this Patriot rally, and a Black Lives Matter Antifa soup drive. Okay, this took place at the Civic Center this past Saturday. That happened. Again, not a 9 News contractor and a security guard and an employee of 9 News out of Denver. Think about that, folks. Consider an employee of a news channel, being involved in that type of altercation. Now, there was bear spray at the time. I don't, that big cloud that people saw, if you're watching this at the beginning, was bear spray, allegedly. And, I don't know, again, I don't know what preceded this, but boy, that's pretty, pretty intense. And the other thing I noticed, John, is the police, I'm not going to second guess their reaction, but they watched this escalate and they watched, they actually watched the shooting. But again, you know, I'm not going to second guess the police because you know how things fell quickly, things happen. So, but there it is. There it was. So now you know. You were out driving your TR6. That's why
I was. That's why it was completely got past me. Yeah. With my, yes, yes, absolutely. Well, Doug, I don't know how to comment on that. The security guard was part of the security detail for this. What was going on there are separate. That's not really clear to me.
Okay. So Nine News, this is my understanding. Nine News, they hired Pinkerton Security. Okay. And the shooter was a security guard for Nine News subcontracting.
Okay.
Okay. And however, this is the other thing that is not clear. There's not a whole lot that's really clear, even at this late date, 48 hours later, is another member of Nine News was arrested. So
So the security guard and the member of Nine News were both arrested?
Yes. One did the shooting. And the other thing I noticed, and folks, you can comment on this too, is there was a guy wearing a Black Guns Matter. I don't know what it was, but he was, it was almost like he was a shill. He was yelling and, you know, just goading people. Go ahead and shoot me. Well, wait a minute. Who's something about that? There was a video right. of that before this. It just right. seemed, it almost seemed very contrived. All right. And you know, again, let's talk about, you had mentioned false flags or the preps for war from the Gulf of Tonkin.
Right.
Are we not seeing the same thing? I mean,
apparently so.
You know,
yeah. It has its own flavor. It has its own distinct qualities, but apparently so, Doug. And, in fact, I got the Senate hearings on right now. Kamala Harris is making her opening statement.
Oh, goody.
Lord knows what she's saying. How convenient. She becomes whatever race she needs to be for whatever event it might be. It might be East End, Jamaican. It may be East Indian. It may be something else. Now, I think she likes to call herself Black at the moment. But that could change again, too, if it suits her fancy. Don't want to dwell on that.
but I love it, though. You're right.
Our opposition, the socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, don't underestimate them. Don't ever underestimate your enemy. These are very bright people with great educations that are well funded and they have no scruples whatsoever about achieving their goal. None at all. It means destroying property, murdering people. They'll do whatever it takes to achieve their goal, which in this case is to win back the Oval Office, went back to the White House, and, of course, maintain their majority in the House and recover a majority in the U.S. Senate, none of which I believe will happen.
I don't either. Up until maybe Saturday, I believed that, man, this is, you know, I don't know. I still really don't know. However, I'm beginning to think, man, Trump is going to just win by a landslide. So, and if that happens, and I'm going to go back to my conversation with Sam Andrews. You know, if Donald Trump wins by a landslide, the left is going to go, I mean, they screamed at the sky last time. They're going to do a lot more this time.
Literally.
Yes.
Literally.
Yes. And if Donald Trump loses, and this is what kind of, this is what really got me too in this conversation. If Donald Trump loses and that's decided, we'll say by the courts, well, mid-February, by February 15th, there's going to be a national gun grab.
Beto O'Rourke in charge of that. That'll be
exactly.
His.
Exactly. So either way, okay, we're going to have violence. It's just what's the tipping point? Where's it going to be? And I just want to apologize to everyone out there. If you think that, you know, if I'm being, just not really coherent, this really isn't a very clear cut. I don't know. You really have to look at this from a lot of different angles to analyze what's really taking place. I say this, the Denver thing was a seminal moment. It's one of many, perhaps, when history looks back on what's taking place today, if we have that ability to do so. You're going to see the Denvers. You're going to see the shootings in Wisconsin, the Kyle Rittenhouses, all of this building up to this crescendo. And that's kind of what I'm thinking. But anyway, what do I know?
Oh, I agree, Doug. And there were things leading up to the Revolutionary War, such as the Boston Massacre, for example, and the Boston Tea Party and other events that were leading up to what took place on the fields of Lexington and Concord on April the 19th.
Yes.
So, you know, we have that ability of hindsight to look back and see that these were moments that were helping coalesce the feelings of Americans against the British crown. And we'll have the, assuming we win, which I believe we will, we'll have the advantage of hindsight to look back and analyze these events from a perspective of having won and looking back from the future of what took place and how things built up to the point that they are right now.
Okay. And see, this is the other part of the equation. We're seeing the street fight, or we're talking about the street fights. But, you know, Sidney Powell was on Sunday Morning Futures. Sidney Powell's always a great interview. Michael Flynn's lawyer. You met Sidney Powell, right?
I met Sidney. I spent an hour with this woman in Texas talking
right.
to her one-on-one. I met, well, like you, Doug, in our careers, I've probably worked with 500 attorneys over the past 48 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And some are very bright. Some are moderately bright. Some, I don't know how the hell they got their law degree. But Sidney Powell is right at the top of the top when it comes to intelligence and quickness, knowledge of the law, dedication, all those things. She is an absolutely, if Mike Flynn had her from the get-go instead of an attorney from a law firm that did not have his best interest at heart, which they did not, they should have, they had a conflict really to be his attorney, quite frankly.
Yes, they did.
But if he'd had Sidney Powell from the get-go, yep. This would have been over a long time ago.
Well, the thing that got me with the interview with on Sunday Morning Futures, Sidney Powell, to cut to the chase, it as they say in Hollywood, and this is from the Conservative Treehouse. You can find the interview at the Conservative Treehouse, but appearing on Fox News with Maria Bartiromo, Michael Flynn's defense counsel, Sidney Powell, cuts through the BS basically to note the Obama administration was not tricked into allowing a smear campaign against Donald Trump and Michael Flynn. Here's the money quote. The Obama administration was participating in the creation and pushing of the smear campaign. And
that's
this is what Donald Trump has been saying.
We've
got him cold. Right. So
the evidence is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the evidence is clear and convincing that from the get-go, the whole thing was generated by Hillary Clinton. But not long after that, Hussein Obama, Joe Biden, John Brennan, Jim Comey, and others were in on the scheme. A criminal conspiracy, quite frankly, is what it was.
Right. And everyone knew exactly what they were doing. No one was stopping them. No one was tricked into participating into this. So when we look back from a historical perspective, this coup, this takeover of America, the left will come out and the media will come out and say, look at the state of the country. Well, it wasn't like this before Donald Trump became president. Yeah, it's because it's like, gee whiz, you know, that building wasn't on fire before the fire department got there. Okay, it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. They caused this. They caused it. So, and they're causing it because, I mean, Brennan, Comey, and why aren't they in jail yet? Brennan, Comey, and Strzok.
I can't make excuses for attorney, the U.S. attorneys involved in this. I wish I could, but I can't. I've been involved in a lot of lengthy, complex legal matters for decades, and the amount of time taken here is off the charts, crazy, too much, way too much time.
Yeah.
But now Attorney General Barr has said publicly he's not going to issue indictments before the election. He doesn't want to be seen as affecting the election unduly. I believe it's wrong because the indictments have plenty of evidence that once they're issued. But that was his decision, and we don't have a choice but to respect it.
Well, Pompeo is releasing the emails from Hillary Clinton. I have a feel now this is a process. It's not a here they are. Okay, so it's here they are and here they are and here. So it's a process. But if I think, I mean, if I think I might know what's kind of hanging in there. And I'll tell you what, people talk about, well, she's a witch, you know, she's perverted. Yeah, she's all that. But I think with respect to this set of emails, it's going to show the depth of her involvement in a treasonous. I think that's the word. Would it be treason or sedition? What's the proper term?
More likely sedition. Treason is giving aid and comfort to an enemy, the United States, which it kind of sort of does that. But I think sedition is probably more accurate.
Yeah. So I do believe that once this, and this is just what I'm thinking, Barr slow walking this or, you know, not having any indictments or anything like that before the election, I kind of figured, you know, you get to the summer before and you don't see any headway. Yeah. Okay. Fine. But I think this Pompeo's release of these emails, I think it's going to show how complicit not just Hillary was and is, but how complicit Obama was and is in the coup attempt at the executive level, but also at the organizational level at what we're seeing today, the riots. That's what I believe.
Well, let's not leave out the complicity of Joe Biden. We've got evidence that he was present at some of these meetings also.
And Harris.
He was and is complicit. You're right, sir.
Yeah, Biden especially. And Biden was part of that, the election or the inauguration day, or I'm sorry, the January 5th, 2017 meeting that sent the email, the CY email. Her name escapes me now. I want to say Samantha Power, but that's not it.
Lisa Page?
No, the black woman who covered her butt. Oh, I just had it here. Anyway.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but the bottom line here is, this takeover is not just a street level takeover. This is a for all the marbles takeover. I mean, by the communists.
It is. This is go for broke time.
Yeah.
The socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims have been working for decades to capture and take over this country.
You got
Donald Trump. Donald Trump changed all that. The only presidential candidate not completely controlled, in recent time was John Kennedy. To a certain extent, Ronald Reagan, they got him under control after they shot him. He managed to get under control after he was shot. But they've managed to control both candidates of both parties for decades. Kennedy was an aberration. At the time, they didn't take him seriously. They didn't take Donald Trump seriously.
Yeah.
Senator Kennedy was too young, talked funny, and he was Catholic. They know there's no way that this young man who talked funny and was Catholic was going to be elected president of the United States. So they didn't try to stop his candidacy. Big mistake. The what changed everything in that election, of course, was television. The first televised presidential debates where people who listen on the radio, they were convinced that Richard Nixon won those debates. People who watched TV, they knew that John Kennedy won those debates. So here we are, more than half a century later, with Donald Trump, who never held elected office. He was a television personality and a very wealthy businessman. They didn't take him seriously at any point. Even the Republicans didn't take him seriously until it was too late. And by the time they figured out it was too late, the die had been cast, and Donald Trump was the candidate of the Republican Party. And that's when the real damage control kicked in. It was I can hear them at these focus groups that they would have and these meetings they would have. Oh my God, this crazy man is going to be the candidate of the Republican Party. What can we do? He's incredibly popular. What can we do? He may very well get elected. What can we do? And of course, that's when this whole scheme got going.
And we see that in this, we see the continuing bitterness in the Lincoln Project that is around, and it's crazy. But let me take you back. I'm going to ask you a hypothetical question. I'm going to tap your vast knowledge base, and ask you this. If President Kennedy at the time, if he was not assassinated, what do you think would have happened differently? I mean, let's game this out just briefly, if you don't mind.
There wouldn't be there would not be a black granite wall on the Capitol Mall with 55,000 names on it. That wouldn't exist. Our money would be solid money backed by metal, backed by silver and gold. We would have seen progress in areas. There would have been no great society creating the welfare plantation. That was Lyndon Johnson's scheme to get a permanent voting base for Democrats. Kennedy would not have been part of that. I don't believe he would have been part of that.
I don't believe either.
I think Kennedy was, believe he was wise enough to understand that the way the American Indians were destroyed was cradle to grave care. And it's just human nature. You do that with most any population, maybe exceptions. But if you provide cradle to grave care for any population, you're basically going to turn them into worthless louts, which is what we did to many, if not most, of the American Indians with cradle to grave care. And that's what's been done with the African Americans in this country. Cradle to grave care, turning the majority of black Americans into worthless louts by design. By design. They didn't care about the African Americans. What they cared about was creating a permanent voting base. That's what they really cared about. And if blacks could rise above their situation through education and hard work, they would no longer be part of the welfare plantation. That posed a direct threat. So we need to keep them on the welfare plantation so they can never rise above their humble beginnings.
Okay. All right. Very interesting assessment. And
there, again, Doug.
Yeah. Can you
hear
me?
Hello.
Can you hear me? Hello.
Okay. Yeah.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
I can. There's some the audio and video has some disruptions here, it looks like.
All right. We're 5x5 on this end. I'm not sure what happened, but okay, or what's happening. It figures, it's things like this just happen. But thank you for that assessment. And I agree with a lot of that. I just hope we don't have to have this conversation in a couple of years from now. The same kind of conversation. What do you think would have happened if President Trump would have completed his second 4 years, not his first, but his second 4 years. But anyway, that's just, I'm telling you,
Well, 2 years of Green New Deal and we'd have rolling blackouts. We'd have the agricultural industry destroyed, much of American manufacturing destroyed. It would be a very unpleasant place to be. And if Biden gets elected, that's exactly where we're headed. We're a return to the policies of Hussein Obama, destroying manufacturing, destroying agriculture, and destroying the infrastructure through shutting down plants. Like the rolling brownouts, I mentioned this morning on my show, Doug. How can it be that the wealthiest state inside the wealthiest country has rolling blackouts? How is that possible? Well, it's possible because the government of California issued restrictions and regulations that shut down much of their electric generating capability, leading to brownouts. That's what's going on there. And they want to bring that to every home in the country, rolling brownouts.
Is there any, boy, I'll tell you, there's a lot of real estate between here and there. Okay. To me. But then again, maybe not. Maybe they can short circuit, pardon the pun there, to get to that point, where the Green New Deal is a thing. And that's not AOC.
Well, it's insane. You know, yeah. Coal-fired plants are now clean. The waste product from making electricity with propane is what? Water? Natural gas? Water?
Yeah.
That's a byproduct of burning natural gas or propane.
Right.
To make electricity or use for any purpose. How does it save the planet to prevent using natural gas to make electricity that has a waste product called water? I mean, are there adults in charge? As sometimes I wonder, are there adults in charge?
It's true. Well, okay. I mean, because now people hearing this conversation might say, well, none of this is going to happen because, of course, you know, Joe Biden, and I'm kind of almost switching topics.
We can't make assumptions. We can't make assumptions, Doug. We hope, we pray that the president will be elected.
Right.
Re-elected.
Right.
We hope and pray that's the case, but we can't make assumptions that he will be.
No, we can't. And if, you know, people will say, well, Joe Biden had said that if he becomes president, he's not going to ban fracking. I'm giving you one example that would affect the state of energy and such. Well, boy, he was anti-fracking for so long, and so was Kamala Harris.
Right.
Yeah. So is he lying or is he misrepresenting, saying, well, they're just going to ban fracking on public lands? I think that was the case.
No, fracking is finished if Biden, is alive.
I agree.
That's a truism.
Yeah. I totally agree. About that. All right. Yeah. So those are just some of the things. But again, I am very concerned regardless of what happens. I hope people are prepared. And folks, you can prepare with John Moore. Go to thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. Make sure you just soak up all of what John has there at his website. And by the way, if you're not doing so, spend a couple of hours a day, 3 hours a day to be exact, with John Moore, going to thelibertyman.com and listen to his shows. Extremely important. On Mondays, he does 5 hours of radio and TV, for this program. But I love his programs. And of course, John, you have regular guests every day of the week, right? So
I do.
Okay.
Different guests every day of the week, except Friday. I have a guest on Friday. I also have on Thursday talking about two different topics, but otherwise there are new guests every week with high levels of expertise in the things they're talking about. I was contacted by a man living in the Far East, an expat, who wanted to come on and hammer on some people that he didn't like their opinions. And I wrote back to him. My audience wants to be educated and informed. They don't want to hear John Moore or a guest of his hammering on people because they don't like their opinions or don't like what they say. That's not what I do.
I heard what you said. Explain that, though, because I think people, and I ask this respectfully, because I think people have a tendency to not quite understand what you and I do and when we bring people on. And sometimes we don't bring people on for that very reason.
Right.
But go ahead and explain that a little bit.
Well, first of all, you know, you and I are both broadcast journalists. And part of what we do, of course, is hammer on the incompetent, unethical communists that call themselves Democrats. Of course we do that. We should do that. But to hammer on other journalists, for example, other broadcast journalists, because we don't like what they say, don't sign me up. I'm not going there. If you have an opinion about them, that's fine, but I'm not going to give airtime to that on my show. I want to fill up with content, information that's real, that's verifiable, that will help people in their daily lives, help people in preparedness, help people understand the world that we live in, help people with their health. I have 2 hours a week devoted solely to health. Of course, you mentioned Sam Andrews several times earlier in the show. Sam is a very unique individual. Live on the air, so I'm not telling any secret, live on the air about 18 months ago, he said the following. He says, well, John, first of all, Doug, did you see the film Charlie Wilson's War?
No.
Okay. That's a kind of a docudrama about how we were aiding the Mujahideen fight the Russians back in the 1980s. Well, Sam was there. He was helping train the Mujahideen to use Stinger missiles, for example, and a lot of credit's given to the Stinger missiles for ending the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. And we were talking about that, and he admits live on air that he personally shot down Russian helicopters. He says, John, those Hind helicopters are so heavy, they couldn't get above 12, 13,000 feet. We get up 15,000 feet, and we shoot down. And Sam was working with the State Department. He was not part of the military. And the State Department paid for him to be trained in some of the most high-speed training with every weapon that you can imagine to go help the Mujahideen. And, of course, he's a gifted world-class machinist. He builds rifles.
Yeah, I didn't know that until we...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. He builds rifles used by some of the best marksmen on this planet, marksmen that protect the president, marksmen that protect the United States, world-class rifles. He's just one example of the I don't have any regular female guests, by the way, now that I think about it, but the guests I have are well-qualified in their areas of expertise to talk about what we talk about.
Oh, you're a misogynist, though. I mean, you know, come on, John. I'm kidding, of course, but.
Well, I'm very proud to have the collection of guests that I do. And we have the Tuesday morning roundtable with myself, Steve Van Noon, former CIA field agent, Steve O'Neill, a nuclear engineer, nuclear scientist, and my friend Leon Green, who was an officer in the U.S. Navy. And we focus primarily on preparedness, but we get into all kinds of areas about our society, our culture, where this country is going, and, of course, how to prepare for what's coming at us.
You know, I was talking to Eric. You can continue, too, with your schedule. But I was talking to Eric this morning, and I said, I'm not sure which day of the week I like the best of John's shows. And Eric says, I've heard them all because our offices are side by side. So, it's a brilliant layout. Yeah, continue though. So you had the Tuesday roundtable,
right?
And then,
well, Wednesdays we have my friend Professor James McKinney. Now, what a CV bio this guy has! He taught mathematics at Cornell University. He taught astrophysics at Cornell University. He's written 12 books. Mm-hmm. He's an amateur archaeologist, advanced to the point where foreign governments consult with him about archaeology matters. Brilliant man, involved in a lot of projects. Jeff Nyquist, who, as I publicly state, should have his own workstation in the West Wing of the White House advising the president on the international communist conspiracy. All he wanted to do in life was to be a high school teacher. That's all the man wanted. That was it. That was his life's ambition in California. So he's studying hard. He's at the university to become a high school teacher in California public schools. And he finds out pretty quickly that unless he became a communist in his heart and soul, that he wasn't going to be allowed to be a high school teacher in California. So he changed his career path and began a quest to understand, comprehend, and report the true nature of the international communist conspiracy. Now, there's been a number of men who've defected from the Soviet Union, high-level KGB, FSU people. Jeff Nyquist is sat across the interview table from these men and interviewed them in great detail, debriefed them, if you will. And he's written several books. I'm not sure how many at this point in time, three or four, maybe five books, and a column that he writes on his blog, jrnyquist.blog, which he updates about every so he's been writing about two articles a week lately because he's kind of motivated. He's finally leaving the state that he loves, moving to another state to get away from the communists. He has a very nice four-bedroom home in California, but he's put it on the market. He's leaving. He's getting out of Dodge, unfortunately.
Well, as are a lot of people, by the way. But yes,
they are. Thousands.
Yep.
The most productive people in the state are leaving. Not the dregs of society, but the most productive people in the state are leaving.
And businesses as well, you know, so.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's going to be left? It's the communist utopian dream of, well, this mixed or this diverse population, but I won't go there. But
what's that? I think I'm paraphrasing. Socialism ends when they run out of other people's money.
That's true.
And that's where it's headed.
Yes.
And Los Angeles Public Schools publish all their material in more than 100 languages, Doug.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that.
How
can you teach?
Well, let's take it with a blank sheet of paper, and we'll say, put at the top of that blank sheet of paper, how to have students who are doomed to failure and not compete successfully in American society, American culture, American business world. And a blank sheet of paper, that's at the top. And we'll make a list of how to do that. Well, first and foremost is language.
Yeah.
If you're not taught English as your first language, you're doomed to failure in this country. Most likely you are. What we used to do was force children to speak English, to write English, to read English. If you want to be in this school, you got to learn our language. We don't need to provide materials in your home language that you grew up with. And that's what was done successfully for many, many decades, well more than a century, to take immigrants from Spain and Italy and France and Germany and have them become bright, educated, productive Americans. We didn't provide the German students with German language material, the French students with French language material. They were provided material in the English language because the people in charge wanted these students to become successful Americans.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Didn't we just pass a, or didn't under the Trump administration, wasn't there a law that was passed, or forgive me if I'm mistaken, or it was a conservative majority, maybe as, I don't know, wasn't there a law passed that English is the quote law of the land? I'm not even sure.
Well, I know many states, my state, Missouri, has done that with English, and, I'm not sure the status of that at the national level. I'm aware that there was an effort in that regard, but I'm not aware if it became a federal statute or not.
I'm not either at the moment, and I apologize for that. But I'm amazed because when I get something from either the DMV or something from the doctor, especially. It's in like 15, 20 different languages.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I had a paper here from, it was actually from my insurance company, but, my goodness, it was a whole bunch of languages. And I don't know. I get tired too. If you get something that needs to be, you have to put it together. in that language is, you get an instruction book in five different languages. It's ridiculous, right. You know?
Right. Right. Well,
what do I know though?
It's probably less expensive. If you have a product that's marketed worldwide to have an instruction manual printed in multiple languages rather than print a bunch of individual, manuals. That may be just a matter of money in that regard. If your product is proper in the United States, France, Germany, Spain.
Yeah, I get that.
That may be nothing more than that. There's not a conspiracy behind every rock, Doug. You know, sometimes things just real simple.
Okay, I just looked this up. The English Language Unity Act was first introduced in 2005. It hoped to establish English as the official language of the federal government of the United States. If passed, it would require that all official functions and proceedings of federal and state government be conducted in English. Let's see here. The 116th Congress, English Language Unity Act. This is 2019-2020. I still don't see where it's passed.
Maybe it hasn't.
It has not.
Thomas.gov, I think, has details on pending legislation. Where they've been passed and made part of the statutes. Doug, we're at a pivotal point in our country, in our culture, in our government. 21 days from now, there's going to be an election. It's too late to register to vote in most jurisdictions. However, it's not too late to offer transportation or child care for somebody that needs help getting to the polls, either vote absentee right now or vote on the third day of November. So make that offer to your conservative friends. Let the Democrats stay home. That's fine. They can find their own way to the polls. And help your conservative friends who want to vote for Donald Trump get to the poll, help with child care, whatever it takes. We need overwhelming numbers, Doug, and every vote counts. Don't fool yourself.
Yeah,
every vote counts.
We do need overwhelming numbers. I don't just remember the Battle of Athens, folks. I don't know what's going to happen with the mail-in ballots. I know that Pennsylvania just struck down an action against the mail-in ballots. I don't know if there's. I just want to see enough where there is absolutely no way that the left can spread this out,
right.
You know, election night out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a given there'll be attempts. That's a given. Well, of course there will be.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, I mean, I remember the election of 2000, and I thought that was a little bit hinky. Okay. Having the Supreme Court ultimately decide the election.
Right.
I don't want to have that ever again.
No, I don't want to see that either.
No, that to me is not a representative Republican action. I wanted to ask you this, and again, as Eric and I were talking earlier today, he said, why don't you ask, because we were talking about your program, we were talking about different guests and stuff. He said, why don't you ask John, maybe is the most surprising or the most disturbing thing that you've heard on your program or you've discussed on your program or you've concluded, speculated, whatever it might be, over the last couple of weeks, or even if, you know, even to the, up through today, up through the current programs, what has got your attention the most? John Moore, not anyone else. John Moore.
The blatant, disregard for the overwhelming by the mainstream media, the blatant disregard for the very strong, clear and convincing evidence that Joe Biden was specifically personally involved with both the takedown of President Trump in 2016 and also the subterfuge involving the Ukraine and his son. The evidence is clear. The evidence is convincing. The mainstream media basically ignores it. Fox News has been covering to a certain extent, doing a pretty good job, actually. But otherwise, the mainstream media just ignores these events as if they never happened. And that's very, I find that very disturbing. It's not a secret anymore that these events took place. It's not a secret that the evidence is clear and convincing. And I find that very disturbing. You and I grew up with, initially, I may be a little bit older than you, John Cameron Swayze, and then Walter Cronkite after that.
Yep.
And America, when Cronkite turned on the Vietnam War, Lyndon Johnson knew it was over. Without the Cronkite support for the war, he knew he couldn't keep going. But it did manage to keep going for another 6 years. amazingly enough. from 68 to 75. So I find that's probably the most disturbing thing I've heard in the news in the last several weeks.
All right. And that's fair. And I too find this extremely disturbing, to think that we've got a presidential candidate. By the way, I think at this point, now I'm no doctor, I don't know, but at this point, I think a case could be made for his mental acuity, mental health.
Easily. Right. Easily. And it should. A little bit light, but it should.
Right.
Absolutely, it should be.
And so speculate with, or please speculate. Let's say that Biden gets in and all this stuff with Pelosi.
He won't be president for 90 days.
Okay.
He'll be gone.
And then what? And then Harris, right?
Then Kamala Harris becomes president and she'll appoint Hillary Clinton vice president and then she'll resign a short time after that.
Either that or, go 10 toes up and assume room temperature because, we all know about the Hillary or the Clinton body count, but. That's what, okay. So to me, that's the plan. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if I would speculate, I would speculate that Biden would step down, Harris up, bring in Hillary Clinton, and there you go. And then,
it's great speculation, and there's a lot of evidence to support that, Doug. There is a lot of evidence. Well, this woman.
Go ahead. Because I was going to ask you where the evidence is. We have time.
Well. Dr. Bill Deagle, who I was on with twice a week for years on his show, he claims that Hillary Clinton is part of an old line European family of witches and warlocks. I don't doubt that for a moment. The track record of Bill and Hillary Clinton is filled with bodies, filled with illegal activity, going back to when Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas and the planes were coming into MENA, the former Air Force base. Literally by the ton. The cocaine was coming in literally by the ton. So they have a long track record of being involved in criminal activity and murdering people whenever it suits their fancy to achieve their goals. So I believe in my heart of hearts that is the plan. Biden and Harris get elected. Biden resigns shortly thereafter. Hillary's appointed vice president and then Kamala Harris resigns. It will be complete chaos, complete turmoil, is what it will be.
Can you imagine what the public reaction to that would be? I can't. Or at least half of the population, the patriot population. I just can't imagine the patriot population.
Well, it would be similar to when Hussein Obama was elected. We're tolerant. We're polite. We go with the flow. If you have to wait in line at Walmart to buy a box of 22 caliber ammunition, you wait in line, whatever it takes to achieve your goal. There'll be a line in the sand, such as Beto O'Rourke wanting to confiscate firearms. There may be other lines in the sand where people will say, no further. This is as far as it goes. And we make our stand. The Second Amendment, the firearms issue, is obviously, clearly, a line in the sand for millions of Americans. If 1% of the Americans own firearms stand up and say no, you're looking at an army of more than 1 million men and women. That's massive. That's right. Bigger than all the active duty combat people in the military. Most people in the military, except the Marines, are administrative people. And, of course, the police forces. You don't want to upset these people. You really don't.
No. And I just hope I hope we don't get there. I just don't. I can't, I can't imagine the back room negotiation of a Beto O'Rourke kind of superintendent, you know, moderating this discussion. Okay, how are we going to deploy, or how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this to take these guns back? I can't imagine anyone, any sane, rational human being.
They'll have to bring in foreign troops. They got no choice.
And okay, so now we're getting into what Dave Hodges is talking about. What are we seeing foreign troop wise, right?
A tad offensive to use Dave's words, and I agree with Dave. They have to use foreign troops. They'll be brought in initially as peacekeepers to end the chaos in the streets, and they'll quickly become occupying force is what they'll become. They can't do this without outside help. They simply can't. A large percentage of the U.S. military will not go along with unconstitutional orders. A large percentage of the police will not go along with unconstitutional orders. There's 3,300 counties in the United States. Many of those sheriffs are not going to go along with unconstitutional laws. So they have to bring in foreign troops. They've got no choice, Doug.
I don't see that going well at all. And I can see a Red Dawn scenario where you'd have, when I say Red Dawn scenario, I'm talking about the aftermath. I don't know the, you know, the lead up to it, but I can see where
we're in the lead up.
Well,
we're in the lead.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I'm talking about, you know, parachutes coming down. We are indeed in the lead up to that Red Dawn scenario. Yes, I agree with that 100%. I don't know the mechanics. I guess I can't really fathom the mechanics of it, but I can see where we can, as a country, we're going to be, there's going to be, the occupied territories and the free territory, you know, I can see where that would happen. Can you, or?
Oh, easily.
Okay.
Easily. I see. There's two films titled Red Dawn. Red Dawn is not something that some Hollywood writer dreamed up as a title for a movie. No, not at all. Red Dawn is an official Pentagon war game scenario. That's where that term came from, Red Dawn.
I heard
an official Pentagon war game scenario. So that's the reality in the fiction. The movie is fictional, but the title itself comes from that wargaming scenario.
Mm. Well, you know, here we are, and weeks away from that, and I used this term with Steve Quayle last week, this event horizon. I think the closer we get to this, John, I think the clearer the picture is going to become. But at the same time, I think that the muddier it's going to be made by the media, if that makes sense.
Oh, they will. Yeah. There'll be obfuscation. There'll be confusion. There'll be lies, which there has been for years, by the way. We lived for basically 4 years with the Russian collusion hoax as being real, promoted by the mainstream media, and other hoaxes promoted as being real. And that will continue. That will ramp up. It'll be even worse if and when the president's reelected. It'll be far worse, Doug. It'll be nonstop, absolutely nonstop.
Do you think if this country were let's say we get past 2021, the inauguration with Donald Trump, and we get into the 2024 election, do you see like a boomerang effect? You know, I know that's kind of far in the future, but would that if there was a Democrat elected in 2024 would, I guess I'm asking for some really wild, I used to call them swag.
Wild speculation.
Yeah, scientific wild ass guess, but what do you see happening, you know, because I'm thinking of my grandchildren, okay, what they're going to have and my children. Would there be a tremendous boomerang effect against the conservative constitutionalists, do you think?
No, it'll be attempted boomerang, but it won't be successful.
Okay.
The only hope our opposition has is bringing in foreign troops to accomplish their goal. That's the only hope.
In all the scenarios, then. I can see where you're saying. So in all of the scenarios, the only way that this is going to, that we can lose or we're going to lose is by foreign occupation.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not optional. They have to do that. They've got no choice. This is the end game. The preparation has been taking place since the 1930s, if not earlier, to develop this mindset of socialism, communism, and American minds. They're in the end game. It's all or nothing for the communists. Right now, not some future date, but right now, they have to use whatever it takes, subterfuge, murder, property destruction, lies in the mass media, whatever it takes to accomplish their goal, because it's all or nothing. Former years of Donald Trump, and they're done. They're finished for probably two generations at least, as far as any legal takeover of this country, leaving extra legal means to do that. That's all they're left with is extra legal. The president's almost accomplished that in one term, if nothing else, by the appointment of federal judges and Supreme Court justices. Former years, they'll probably get one more Supreme Court justice, maybe 100 or more federal judges, and continuing to dismantle the harmful regulations that harm American business, American manufacturing, American agriculture. All those things are being dismantled, and the socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, they know that.
Right.
And they're fearful of it because they know that they're done. Former years of Donald Trump, they know they're finished for two generations. They know that.
Which is why, you know, even though, I mean, we've got mutual friends, John, that they take issue with Donald Trump, some of his decisions. And, you know, I understand that. But I believe truly that Donald Trump is not part of this establishment. And I mean that in that very sense of that word establishment. Because of the fight that he's getting every step of the way. So I do see that. So, and by the way, I do agree with you. I think after 8 years of this pro-constitutional, maybe, just maybe he could save the country. I mean, maybe, right? I mean,
right.
One can hope. And by the way, keep your eyes on this. Last week, again, this being reported, I just want to drive this point home because I think this is going to be extremely important, what Secretary of State Pompeo is doing here. He said, Donald Trump yesterday on Sunday Morning Futures saying, the emails, you're not going to believe what's in them.
The Hillary Clinton emails?
Yeah.
No, that's dynamite.
Yeah.
That's liquid nitroglycerin. I mean,
I can't wait for this. I mean, I'm serious. It's,
yeah, right. Well, Hillary was attempting to conceal her activities, why she had the private server. It's dynamite, and it will explode in the face of the Democrats is what it will do once these documents are released. And is there a prospective date for them to be released, Doug? Do you know?
Forthwith. No, I don't have a date. I'm looking at an article by Mediaite. Soon.
Before the election.
Oh, yeah. Within, like, this week. Again, it's going to be a process as opposed to a dump. But they're trying, and this is what President Trump said, they're trying like hell, but we got them. We have found things nobody can believe. Now, look, I know that he tends to be hyperbolic at times, but I got to believe
him. Well, he does.
That's
his nature. But he's seen the documents, obviously, and been briefed on them, so he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. And he said people are shocked. They're stunned. But let's see what happens. But Hillary Clinton was totally crooked, and so were plenty of other people. And you know who I think is in the crosshairs on this? Abso-flippin-lutely is John Brennan. John Brennan, I have a feeling. Look, there are people clamoring for people to go to at the top echelon to go to jail.
Right.
My vote is John Brennan based on everything I've seen.
It's a short list. You know. Hillary, Obama, Joe Biden, FBI Director Comey, CIA Director John Brennan, and others, of course. How many of these men and women are indicted remains to be seen. There's political aspects of this. We may not want to humiliate ourselves in front of the planet with indicting a former president. But I think everybody will get the point if everybody surrounding him is indicted. That will make the point pretty strong, won't it?
I think so. And I'm not sure if it has to be a president. I'd like it to be a performer. But especially with people calling, people like Colbert and others, and Hollywood, in mass calling for President Trump's arrest and how delighted they'll be. But I would like to see that take place because if anyone deserves, to be put on trial for sedition, as we talked about before, among other things, it would be Bathhouse Barry. All right. John Moore, again, the man, the myth, the legend. I want to thank you so very much. You have a great show every day, and I appreciate that. Any last closing comments, my friend? Anything you
just
want
to reemphasize say? How important it is to help people get to the polls on election day or get to the county clerk before then to vote absentee. It is not optional. Every vote counts. And people need to understand that these local elections, especially, I've seen local elections decided by 6 votes and where the person who lost didn't have their own family members who was more than 6 failed to vote. I've seen that happen firsthand locally. Every vote counts.
Every vote counts. Yeah, indeed. Absolutely. It does. All right. I've got some housekeeping to do. I'm going to cut you loose. I only have about 2 minutes anyway. So thank you very much.
Next Monday.
Next Monday. Okay. It'll be a whole new week, a whole new set of headlines. All right.
It will be. Absolutely.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks. Folks, that was John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's his website. And it's, again, it's accessible by way of, you go to HagmanReport.com. Go to HagmanReport.com. And there on the top, there's a banner for all of our shows. And the link to his show is in the program description box. No place else. Not on YouTube or anywhere else. Real quick, a couple of housekeeping notes, folks. I want to thank you so much for supporting us in our coffee sales. We had a great month last month. Just got the numbers in, and I just want to thank you so very much because the proceeds do go to help human and child sex trafficking. There it is there on your screen. We have 3 different kinds of coffee. We've got the whole bean, the ground, and then, of course, the K-Cups. Detective's Choice is the hyper-caffeinated. Then, of course, Patriot and Revolution blends. Dark roast coffee. It's gourmet coffee. More expensive. Why? Because, well, really 2 reasons. We try to get it to your door by within 3 days from the roaster to your door within 3 days. And the second reason then is the proceeds. And the majority of the proceeds go to help Vets for Child Rescue and Rust Is Ours organization as well. So that's why. That's why. It's not because I need or Eric needs new tires on his bicycle. No. Real quick as well, again, tomorrow, Sam Andrews. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for Final Warning Conference, do so, okay? Go to gen6.com, definitely. It's going to be a fantastic conference. And I'm going to be giving 2 presentations at the end of the month, for Pastor Paul Begley's conference, and the other, how did I forget that? Help me out here. Whose conferences am I doing, Pastor Paul?
I know Begley's.
Russ Dizdar.
Dizdar's?
Oh, my gosh. I just went sideways there again. Yeah. I'm telling you, folks, forget, okay, just drive erratically and let them drive you. Trust me on that. I am serious now. Pastor Paul Begley, I'm looking forward to delivering a presentation about the deep state, as well as Russ Dizdar's presentation as well, or doing a presentation for Russ Dizdar's virtual conference as well, both virtually, and I'm excited to virtually meet everyone. Lastly, this little bit of news. Watch this as well. As the as I believe the emails that are coming out, are important. There's pushback by Republicans, against the president wanting him to drop the Russiagate issue. Just keep your eye on that. Oh, can you show my, I got something Saturday. Can you show that on that picture of my vehicle? I had a great time with this. I don't know if we have time. Okay, that's my vehicle. And that's on Hagman PI Twitter. If you look at it, you can see President Trump in the back seat. Boy, did I get the looks. Good night, everyone.